And welcome to the very first pilot episode of Radiodrome, which by pilot we mean this is the episode where you can't judge us.
Very true.
I'm Brad Jones from YouTube's The Cinema Snob.
And I am Jared Foyles from Springfield, Illinois.
You are Carter and Game Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Two That's people right. out there know exactly who that is.
Two people. Yes, I am legendary.
Well, actually, I think like 1,000 people watched the first part of Game Boys, and only like two people made it to the end. Or something like that. It's still better than how Midnight Heat did. But welcome to Radiodrome, and... you'll have to excuse me because I'm opening my beer because I got to be drunk for this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's the very first radio show I've ever had where I can actually say the word fuck and drink beer. Well, I take that back because I was drunk quite a few times on the oldie station.
See, for those that don't know, before Brad was making movies, or even while you were making movies, your day job was...
Oh, no, that was a night job, my friend.
Oh!
I worked 4 years at an oldie station here in town, and for a while I had to be in the building in the overnights. The actual show was on in the evenings, but that was 20 minutes of me pre-recording it, and then 6 hours of me just sitting in the studio watching movies.
Oh, wow.
Best job ever. I have no idea why I quit that job. Oh, that's right. It was in the overnights, and I had no social life because of that. No wonder all the movies I wrote back then were really dark and violent.
Yeah, overnight jobs do stink. I remember I worked overnights at Target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't just kick back like I did and just watch The Butcher Boy and, you know, movies like that.
Stock shelves. That's all I did. Stock shelves.
Ooh,
yeah.
That doesn't sound fun.
No,
at all.
It's not.
That sounds horrible.
Worst part is I also had to be on the team that unloaded the truck, and they unload the truck box by box. Not with pallets. Yeah.
See, whenever I had to actually work at the other radio station, I had a beeper. And every time it would go off, that means a radio station was off the air. I go in, push a button, leave, back to work. Or no, back to watching whatever the hell it was I was watching at the time. But this was before you and I had met, and me and our friend Nick, who was also in Game Boys, had a community radio show for a very, very brief period of time. It was like me and you have written some notes down, stuff that we're going to talk about and stuff like that. That is a billion steps way ahead of anything me and Nick did on this show.
Okay.
And this was, and me and Nick's show was live.
Wow.
Like most of me and Nick's show was me sitting there talking and Nick would be playing with Silly Putty. He'd be playing with Silly Putty and we ended up getting fired. Because, how do I even begin to go into this story?
Start from the beginning.
Well, this was back in the days when I was kind of a womanizer.
Nice.
And there was a girl that I was kind of toying with, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And she would often call and, excuse me, she would often call and show up to the radio station. Well, one time...
Naked?
No, thank God. one time, I had to leave the station at one point and go pick somebody up. And while I was gone, Nick was in charge of the station, which was mistake number one. So this girl calls, Nick puts her on the air. Nick put the girl on the air, and she's going into these bizarre rants and spiels and whatnot, and like Nick is like kind of dismissing her as being like the stalker of our show. Well, this radio station was funded by a local school board who didn't really take too kindly to the fact that there was like a nympho stalking one of the shows, so we got canned.
So that was it. I mean, is there
that was
what's like some details? Like what would like how would her calls go? Is what I want to know.
Well, we never put her on the air.
except for that one time.
Except for that one time when I left Nick in charge. We never put her on the air. And she would, this has been quite a few years ago, but it was always really kind of deviant and sexual in nature what she would be talking about. I dismissed it because even at the other radio job I had, we always had people like that, which makes, for me, Play Misty for Me, one of the scariest movies ever made. So I just kind of, you know, sort of dismissed it. So I can't remember in great detail what she was saying when she was on the air, but it was very... She didn't cuss or anything like that because we couldn't say fuck or shit or any of that on this community radio station. But she didn't do any of that. She just came across as really deviant and weird, and that was frowned upon by the school board.
I see. Sounds to me like they were just needing a reason to get rid of you.
Oh, they really were, because when we started that show out, we were on at 3 p.m. About a month into it, we got moved to midnight. Which, I have no idea what a member of the school board was doing, listening to our fucking show come fucking midnight.
Yeah.
That was great when we were on midnight, because... Yeah.
You had a little more leeway.
We had more leeway, and essentially we could go on the air as long as we wanted, so long as we were done by 6 in the morning when the students come to school.
Wow. Did you ever do that? Did you ever go from midnight
to 6 in the morning? Oh, God, it was hard enough to fill 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
Because it was essentially me filling 2 hours on there and Nick looking at stick death videos on the computer. He's like, oh man, this one's hilarious. Oh, the car, it's driving over the green one's head. Like, yeah, our viewers are appreciating this on the radio, Nick.
Welcome back to the Radiodrome.
Yeah, right now we're going to take a look at some entertainment news. This is just a pilot, so there's no theme for the entertainment news in the background. You can just sing like the Miami Vice theme to yourself or something like that. Or go back and just, you know, hum the Hill Street Blues theme again, which is awesomely stuck in my head. Best theme ever.
Let's go to the mall.
All right, here's something you're going to like. Guy Ritchie is set to brand out from the world of gangster cinema. The filmmaker is reportedly in Hollywood to begin writing a script for a remake of Guys and Dolls. In case you don't know, Guy Ritchie is the one who did Snatch, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh my God.
Revolver. Best known for his London-based crime films, is said to have roped in movie hard man Jason Statham to show off his vocal talents in a reworking of the classic musical, which originally starred Brando and Frank Sinatra.
Let me guess, there's going to be a lot of car chases and Guys and Dolls.
Oh, there better be.
Hold on. Just got these dancing shoes out of the dry cleaners.
A source tells British newspaper The Sun, Guy has been on the case with the idea of making a musical recently. He has been throwing ideas around with Jason Statham about writing their own musical. Guy has a lot of meetings with top studio bosses about other projects, but the Guys and Dolls idea really tickled him, and it tickles me too. I can't wait. Oh my God. I had to pull this story because I immediately saw Jason Statham's name on there. Jason Statham stories immediately get bumped up to top priority.
Brad here is a huge Jason Statham fan, and I mean, I like Jason Statham movies, and I like the way he drives. It's just...
Oh, you've been holding out for him to be in a musical, clearly.
This will actually be pretty interesting for me, because I'd want to see what Jason Statham is like, you know, doing something other than driving.
He's done other types of stuff before in, like, more minor movies, like London with Chris Evans. He played a... kind of a yuppie cocaine dealer in it. And he actually had hair in the movie, too.
Oh, wow.
He played just a drug dealer, an impotent drug dealer in the movie. It was okay. It wasn't the greatest movie in the world. Like, I'm saying that just because it was Jason Statham playing that role. If it was anybody else in there, I honestly, I might not have even watched the movie. because there are movies that I've only watched just because Jason Statham is in it.
Nice.
I probably would not have seen Paul W.S. Anderson's Death Race if Jason Statham wasn't in it. And I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it if Jason Statham wasn't in it.
I mean, Transporter was awesome.
Transporter's awesome. Transporter 2, 3 was cool. Crank, fucking awesome.
Have yet to see 3.
3's great. I saw it in the theater on my birthday. That was my birthday movie.
Nice.
Went to go see it with my dad. Oh, it was awesome. And glad I took my dad to go see that one and not Crank 2.
Crank just, to me, seems kind of ridiculous.
No, it's awesome. It's great. I say that because, like, taking my dad, who has a very conservative taste in movies, taking my dad to see Crank 2, I might as well take him to go see The Toxic Avenger or some trauma movie. That's what Crank 2 is. Crank 2 is a giant fucking trauma movie starring Jason Statham.
Interesting.
According to IMDb, Lloyd Kaufman is in the movie somewhere. I didn't see him in there, but on IMDb, he's somewhere in the movie. And that's what the movie feels like, a giant trauma film.
Huh.
It was a blast. It basically takes the first one and turns it into a comedy, essentially. You got David Carradine is in the movie playing an old Asian man with a giant Fu Manchu mustache. It's got Corey Haim in the movie. Corey Haim.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Corey Haim plays a strip club owner with a fucking mullet. I didn't even know it was him until like maybe 15 minutes after he'd been on screen. Why would I possibly think that I'm going to see Corey Haim in this movie that I'm seeing in the theater?
Oh my god.
It was great, and it sucks so much that that movie did not do well when it was at the box office, because god damn it, I wanted to see Crank 3D.
Crank 3D.
Oh my god.
Oh, well, you know what? 3D movies are coming out. I don't even think it matters how bad a movie goes. I think you may see that.
Crank 3D.
You may see
I better
that.
Fucking see it.
You may see that.
Well, before then, I'm going to see the Jason Statham musical opening day.
Speaking of 3D movies, I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it yet and if it's still out on theaters, which I doubt it, Monsters vs. Aliens in 3D.
Didn't get around to seeing
it. Oh, man. I mean, I invited everybody on my birthday, which you were doing. I don't know.
You didn't tell us you were seeing that movie. You just said you wanted us to come see a kid's movie.
Oh.
That's why we stayed at the bar. that didn't happen. But we thought you were talking about My Bloody Valentine 3D. We were all very disappointed when we found out it was something else.
Oh.
My Bloody Valentine 3D was pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It's out on DVD now.
So. It's out in DVD in like the Anaglyph kind of 3D glasses.
Seriously?
Yeah. Oh. I don't know how, if the Real D technology that they have now could even work on a television. I have no idea. I really don't know how that technology works.
Maybe
but
an HD TV.
Maybe. Maybe. But I do know that the way that they've released My Bloody Valentine 3D on DVD is like the red and blue Anaglyph glasses, like the same way that they released the Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D on DVD. And I was over at a friend's place watching the Friday the 13th Part 3 DVD, and we're fiddling with the fucking picture levels on the TV, trying to get the goddamn thing to work, and there was just no doing. But we put it in the computer, it worked just fine.
Really?
Yeah, we watched Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D on the computer, and it worked great. We didn't even have to reset any levels or anything like that. It worked just fine. And it was really Friday 13th Part 3 is my favorite.
Was it a monitor like this, a flat panel monitor?
It was larger than the one that we're looking at right now. It was a decent sized computer monitor.
But was it like that? I mean, was it
like
was
small?
It,
like how big is that?
No. Not the screen size. I'm talking about like
flat. Yeah,
yeah. The flat panel.
I believe. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a newer computer screen because
model. these are basically HD monitors. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, maybe it will work on HD.
Yeah, it worked. It worked just fine, and it was really cool seeing it's ever since I was a kid. That's been my favorite Friday the 13th movie. Hmm. I've never seen it in 3D before because when it was on VHS, you couldn't fucking watch it in 3D. It was always in goddamn 2D, but yeah. even minus the 3D effects and all of that, that movie is just a lot of fun. It is so oh, yeah. much fun. A lot of great characters. It's the first time Jason has his hockey mask,
which oh, yeah.
right there makes it a classic.
Oh, yeah.
And so anyway, when I finally got to see it in 3D, and it was so cool, even though we're just watching it on a computer screen. And I do know that some places do show old film prints of Friday the 13th Part 3 in the theater. We live in Springfield, Illinois. That's not going to happen around Woot. Here.
Well, I don't know. Showplace 12 did just start getting the 3D.
Well, I'm not talking about projectors. That. I'm talking about like how places like Chicago, bigger oh. cities, will have screenings for. Like, you could probably go somewhere in Chicago and watch Sleepaway Camp in the theater.
The drive-in.
We got a shitty ass drive-in though. They don't play the fucking drive-in that we have here. They play like the fucking Nancy Drew movie. Yeah. We have a okay. shitty drive-in. They don't fucking play drive-in movies.
Shitty drive-in. Take yeah. order, please.
Stranded at the drive-in. And yeah, the only time I was ever at the fucking drive-in that we have now, and it was really cool because it was the first time the drive-in was open. And they played a double feature of Grease and one of my favorite movies of all time, The Hollywood Nights,
oh,
which
nice.
Is fucking absolutely hilarious. It's better than Animal House. It is a classic. And so that was cool. That is a drive-in.
Robot House!
Robot House!
That is that's a drive-in double feature right there. A drive-in double feature is not Scooby-Doo and Scooby-Doo 2. That's the fucking drive-in that we have here, and it pisses me off. I just want to go to a fucking drive-in and watch a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie. Is that too much to ask?
I remember whenever I went to the drive-in, I saw Ratatouille and one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
And that's another thing. They have weird double features.
Yeah.
That's not a double feature.
Yeah.
You'll go there and they'll be playing like a double feature of like American Pie and Halloween H2O. That's not a double feature. That's just movies you threw at a fucking dartboard and just picked two random movies.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I was going to say, like, I think normally they do, like, special events and stuff like that. Like, I think for Halloween, don't they open or they stay open till after Halloween?
And I don't think they do. I think they close before Halloween.
Do they?
Yeah. Hmm. I can only think of a couple of occasions where I would have gone and seen something that was playing there. They showed Monty Python and the Holy Grail at one point. And they also showed the Rocky Horror Picture Show at one point. For the love of God, just show Caligula, please.
Yes.
Show my favorite movie of all time.
Yes.
God damn it.
Caligula.
I don't care if it's the R-rated version. I would still fucking go just so I can laugh at the R-rated version.
Oh, turn your heads, kids. The orgy scene.
Right, yeah. I have existed since the morning of the world, and I shall exist until the last star falls from the night. Some people can quote, you know, Back to the Future verbatim. I can quote Caligula.
Nice.
My favorite movie of all time.
Nice. Nice.
That's why the Cinema Snob has a big Caligula poster right behind I love how in those videos, like, the character is supposed to be this pretentious uber snob who, you know, you would think probably only watches, like, Orson Welles movies or, you know, fucking Terrence Malick and shit like that. Yet, it's my actual room that I'm filming that in. So for some reason, I got fucking the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
The Toxic Avenger. And
continuity, Brad. Continuity. Yeah,
Caligula and Zardoz.
Zardoz.
A fucking uber pretentious fucking cinema snob like that, it's not heard of Zardoz.
Yeah, exactly.
They've probably seen The Rock with Sean Connery.
Welcome to The Rock.
Welcome to Zardoz.
But it wasn't a rock. It was a rock lobster.
It was a rock lobster. We were at the beach. everybody had matching towels.
I'd go into it more, but I can't remember more lyrics to that song.
I
like the song, but I don't have it memorized.
I don't want to go into it.
Think of someone else,
she blinded me a science, Lottie. It's poetry in motion, Miss Moneypenny.
But should we get to some other entertainment news here?
Sure. Why don't we do that after some commercials?
Ooh, a tea!
Welcome back to the Radiodrome. As promised, now that we've teased you enough, let's go into some news. Jean-Claude Van Damme, coming off the high he received for JCVD.
Which is awesome. I recommend everybody go out and see that movie. I went out and bought it.
It's like what, an autobiography?
No, not at all. It's actually a pretty serious drama.
Really?
Yeah. And he plays himself in the movie, who gets entangled in this armed robbery at a bank. But it's not an action movie at all. Like, he needs money really bad, and he gets taken hostage at this bank because he's lost his daughter in a custody battle.
So it's not a true story.
It's not a true story at all.
Okay.
No, not at all. All right, well, maybe, I know he's been divorced. Maybe he has had a custody battle. I don't know, but the box cover for it says, from a quote from a critic, it says, Van Damme doesn't deserve a black belt. He deserves an Oscar.
Oh, wow.
Which is fucking true. It is one of... He has a monologue in this movie that I would seriously put right up there with Harvey Keitel's church monologue in Bad Lieutenant. I mean, it's that fucking good.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he's lining up his next few projects, one of which is a horror film called The Breed. Here's the lowdown.
The Brood? Sweet.
The Brood Witch. It's a great story, great script with true emotion. I want to show the fans I am transferable. I wanted to make a horror movie a few years back, but the script was weak and had no direction, Van Damme says. The Breed is different.
It was the Prom Night remake.
The Breed is different, he says. It's set in a village where strange things happen. You know, let the movie speak for itself. So, from what I gather, it's a sequel of The Village.
Oh, thank God.
What a twist!
Stupid fucking twist. I saw the trailer for that movie, The Village. I'm sitting there in the theater like, that takes place in the present. Spoiler alert, by the way.
Oops. Whoops.
Here come
the hate emails.
I'm looking forward to this because I am a really big Van Damme fan, and I've seen a lot of the work that he has done that have gone direct to video. He does choose some pretty dark projects.
Yeah.
Like ones that actually really do show that somewhere in between him doing movies like Street Fighter, you know, movies that were, you know, out in the theater, somewhere in between then and him doing movies that he's been doing like in the past 5-6 years or so, somewhere in that time, Van Damme has actually become a pretty damn good actor. A really fucking good actor.
I mean, he's not terrible by all means. It's just, I think he just gets into some really crappy roles.
He does movies now that have gone to direct to DVD that are even better than a lot of the ones he's had in the theater.
Yeah.
Like Wake of Death is one of them, which is a revenge film. He is really fucking good in that movie. It's a damn good flick. And he did one called The Replicant with him and The Rook, and he plays a serial killer in the movie.
Well, apparently, according to this, he was attached to a Bigfoot project that never came to fruition. And I guess maybe the fact that Steven Seagal kicked things up a notch by making the leap into horror.
Yeah, I saw that fucking movie, by the way. Against the Dark.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it a couple of weeks ago. No. I'll say this about Van Damme. Van Damme is still in shape, all right?
Oh, yeah?
Van Damme can still fucking kick ass.
What you trying to say about me, huh?
I'm trying to say that Steven Seagal looks like James Belushi.
Oh, what do you mean? What you trying to say?
Like, I watched.
Like,
this.
You think I should be in Animal House? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes.
Well, maybe I will.
That's Jim Belushi. No, oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's John Belushi.
Oh,
Jim Belushi and Steven Seagal. They need to team up for like another sequel to K-9. But fucking
the world according to Steven.
This Steven Seagal movie, Against the Dark. Steven Seagal is honestly barely in the movie.
Oh wow!
Like dead serious. Like the first 40 minutes of it, it'll cut to him every now and then. He's essentially playing Blade. It'll cut to him every now and then walking to the destination of the movie, which most of it takes place in a hospital.
Sounds a lot like Thunder of the Gigantic Serpent.
Oh, that's a classic.
Fast, Ted Fast. Which, that's coming up for you snob fans this week on Pierre Kirby.
Pierre Kirby week. That old exit about a pain in the ass.
is still not done.
But the fight scenes, the fight scenes in Against the Dark, whenever, Steven Seagal's got a big fucking sword in the movie, and he kills a lot of vampires. I don't know what they are. They're vampires or zombies. They're like fucking zompires in this movie. I will say this, like, the makeup and the gore was really good.
Really?
Yeah, it actually was pretty good. But movie itself sucked. Whenever it shows Steven Seagal, like, killing one of these things with his sword, it is such an awkward camera angle that they use. They almost use, like, a point-of-view shot from the monsters, which just show Steven Seagal just kind of, like, whacking his sword at the camera. And then, you know, all of a sudden the fucking thing is dead. Like, there's hardly any fucking combat in this movie.
Interesting.
Well, there is combat in it, but not from Steven Seagal. Like, Steven Seagal's buddy in the movie is... I'm watching it like, this guy looks like The Rock. He's like The Rock's stunt double in The Rock's movie.
Nice.
It was... My fiance Jillian loved it, but... I mean, you know, she considers Twilight to be a real vampire movie. And, oh my God, she's going to listen to this.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Honestly, I love Twilight. I do not love Twilight. It's a terrible vampire movie.
Oh. And all the teeny boppers that are in love with that movie, I swear.
Twilight was worth going to see in the theater, and I'll tell you why. Because Jillian... she took me to go see it.
And then you got laid right afterwards.
Took me to go see it. As if it was my idea to go see it. We went to go see it on the midnight showing. She's a huge fan of the books, and it's just not really my thing. But anyway, we go see it. There are fucking teeny boppers all over the fucking place wearing shirts like Team Edward, Team Jacob.
Yeah.
And, every time, like, fucking, what's his name, Robert Pattinson, whenever he comes on screen as Edward, it's like a collective fucking teeny bopper orgasm around the theater. They're hooting and hollering, and Jillian, who, by the way, is very, very Italian, she spent a majority of the movie actually yelling at teeny boppers to shut the fuck up.
Nice!
Like, that totally fucking made that whole experience worth going to see that shitty movie just to see my girlfriend, my fiance, yelling at teeny boppers.
Nice. Nice.
Well, she'll probably expect me to be trashing Twilight on here.
Putting them in place.
Yeah.
That's a great one. They should have more people like that, you know, just anywhere at any theater, whenever somebody's talking, they should have Jillian there just telling people to shut the fuck up.
We watched the riff tracks of Twilight.
Oh,
hilarious.
Oh.
Oh, but Jillian didn't like it very much.
For those of you that don't know about riff tracks is if you're fans of MST3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000, you will totally love riff tracks. Riff tracks is Mike Nelson and the two other guys that voiced Crow and Tom Servo. And what they're doing is they're basically putting commentaries of over movies, audio commentaries.
It's the Mystery Science Theater thing, but they do like modern, like mainstream movies.
Oh yeah.
It isn't like, you know, Mystery like, Science Theater, Earth versus the Spider.
Like, you could take the worst movies in the world, watch the riff tracks,
yeah.
and it'd be so much better.
Oh, yeah. And
Batman and Robin, enough said.
Right, which is the best riff tracks. If you're going to only watch one riff tracks... Watch the Batman and Robin one.
Yeah.
The Twilight one was really good. And Jillian just hated it. Oh, my God. I'm sitting there like, not so funny when it's a movie you like. She's like, no, it's not.
What was weird is, you know, I remember going to that website, and they riff tracked Back to the Future. And I'm like, oh, I got to hear this. There were two voices that I'd never heard before.
Yeah, it's not. It's always Mike Nelson, but it's not always Kevin Murphy and Bill Corbett. More often than not,
but that's just it, though. I don't think I heard Mike Nelson.
I think that people can create their own riff tracks. Yeah, or something
and that's
like that.
The weird thing. We should do that.
Yeah, exactly. I can, man, if I had my old DVD collection, I could pick out quite a few.
Yeah.
I remember we tried doing something like that once with a Porno Holocaust when I had a sound mixer and a microphone. We tried doing like a riff tracks kind of thing with Porno Holocaust. This was quite a few years ago. And fucking, it's harder than it looks. We needed a script.
Oh, yeah. I think...
They do use a script.
Yeah, they had to have. Cause yeah. like,
they use scripts for that stuff.
There were so many gags on there that was just so spot on and everything
yeah.
that you just can't, you know, it took a lot of timing that you just can't really do off the top of your head.
Yeah, yeah, which was our mistake. We tried doing that. Just coming up with shit off the top of our head about Porno Holocaust.
Oh, I love doing that with movies just whenever they're... Whenever I've finally dispositioned a movie as really bad, I'll just, like, stop enjoying it and start making fun of it.
Oh, God, yeah. Bad movies are fun.
Yeah.
As long as they're entertaining, you know? I mean, as long as it's fucking... If it's entertaining, then... If it's just fucking dull and shitty and boring, then why am I even fucking watching it? But maybe that's why my fucking favorite director in the world is Bruno Mattei.
Who?
Oh, he did Terminator 2.
Oh, he did?
Well.
The other yeah. Terminator 2. I was like, wait a minute, what? Really? I thought that was James Cameron.
Oh, you're thinking of that Terminator 2. Oh, no. This is the real Terminator 2. The one that is actually a ripoff of Aliens. It's a ripoff of Aliens and Megaforce.
Nice.
But yeah, he did that and like Hell of the Living Dead, and he's done a few that even I'm like no, I this sucks. Like Violence in a Women's Prison and like the True Story of the Nun from Monza.
Wow.
Well, I tried watching that fucking piece of shit. I couldn't get past the first 10 minutes, which is just someone jerking off a horse.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it wasn't one of Bruno's best. It really wasn't.
Was Tom Green in that one?
No. That would have made it worse. But Violence in a Women's Prison, that movie sucks so much. But Bruno Mattei also did Women's Prison Massacre, which is one of my favorite exploitation films of all time. It's like he put all the great stuff in Women's Prison Massacre and just took the stillbirth and put it into Violence in a Women's Prison. That's right, you heard me.
Wow.
Dude, I've been recording snob videos all week. Of course, I'm going to say something really, really sick. I know it's time for tragic news stories accompanied by silly music.
All right, here we go. Tragic news stories filled with silly music. Music producer Phil Spector has been sentenced to 19 years to life in prison for the murder of actress Lana Clarkson A Los Angeles judge sentenced Spector on Friday to 15 years to life for second-degree murder and 4 years for personal use of a handgun. He would be 88 before he would be eligible for parole. The judge also ordered Spector to pay more than $16,000 in funeral expenses and more than $9,000 to estate victims assurance fund. The 69-year-old producer stared impassively at the judge as he spoke. Spector was convicted of second-degree murder in April in connection with the shooting death of Clarkson in 2003.
That's a tragic story with silly music. Yeah, that's what we thought of off the top of our head earlier. Show prep? Fuck that. Dude, tragic stories with silly music. Perfect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He did it. Phil Spector's guilty. Look at his hair. He did it.
You know what I want to know is, what did he produce? Like, who did he produce?
Beatles and
really?
Like the Crystals and a lot of the girl groups of the 60s and different stuff. I can still hear Tiny Tim in the background.
I guess you could say Phil Spector really knows how to cut. Ooh. Too soon?
I've never been so sure that someone was guilty since I saw the movie Murder in Space. Watched this piece of shit movie called Murder in Space a couple weeks ago. And it's awful. It's this made-for-TV crap from the early 80s. And it's different. People from different nationalities are on board this spaceship. And you know they're from different nationalities because they have their flags on the shoulder of their jacket. They have their country's flags on there. And a girl ends up getting murdered on there. So it's this murder mystery. And I don't even need to watch the rest of it because the American astronaut on board is Michael Ironside, who was, he was one of the bad guys in Total Recall. He always plays a bad guy.
See you in the party, Richter.
Richter. He played Richter.
Oh, did he? I ripped off his arms.
He did it. Michael Ironside did it. I don't need to watch the rest of this piece of shit. And,
open your mind.
I can talk about something cool that I watched, or that I rewatched yesterday. I guess this will be like my little film review for the episode.
Okay.
As if we haven't been talking about movies already.
Right.
Hitler, Dead or Alive.
Really?
Hitler, Dead or Alive. I found this on Cinemageddon.com. I found it quite a few months ago. And it was just one of the random torrents that they had on their front page. And it said something about it being worse than Plan 9 from Outer Space and absolutely hilarious and all this stuff. So, me being curious, I torrented it and I burnt a copy of it and I watched it. The fucking thing is amazing. Oh my god. It is best war movie ever. Oh my god. If you have not seen this movie, watch it. What it's about. This movie was made in 1942 as is basically an American propaganda film in World War II. These three wise guys who, I don't know, they escape or they just get set free from Alcatraz, and they're like, you know, the types of wise guys like what say we do now, Johnny? See? And yeah, and stuff like that. They see in the newspaper that this tycoon has put an offer in the newspaper to give $1 million to whoever can kill Hitler. Because in
Operation
World War
II, Valkyrie is in effect.
Yeah. In World War II, we were just waiting for someone to take out a classified ad in a paper to kill Hitler.
Right.
So these three wise guys take the guy up on this offer, and there's even a line in there like, hey, what say for an extra $1 million? We bump off Mussolini? So they join the Canadian Air Force so they can parachute into Germany. And this is the best part of the movie. They're in their plane, in their Air Force plane. They hear a German one coming behind them. And so one of the guys goes like, oh, I'll take care of this guy. Guy whips out a Tommy gun, kicks the plane's door open, starts shooting. Then it cuts to the German plane doing a nosedive right into the ground. So they parachute into Germany. It's like they parachute like 230 miles away from Berlin, so they're probably not even fucking in Germany. But they hear that Hitler has doppelgangers and lookalikes and stuff like that. But no, here's how they're going to find the real Hitler, because they found out that Hitler actually has a scar on his upper lip, which is the reason why he has the mustache. So the guy's like, I got me a secret weapon. And it's a thing of shaving cream and a razor.
So before we kill Hitler, we're going to give him a nice close shave.
It is so fucking funny. Oh my, and I firmly believe it's not supposed to be funny.
So do the Cinema Snob fans have something to look forward to after Peter Kirby week?
I don't know if I'll do that one. It is a little old. I tend to stick to ones from the 70s and 80s.
So this is literally an old 40s
movie. This was made in 1942. Oh, wow. This was intended to be
old black and white.
This was intended to be like an American propaganda film. Wow. Like at the end of the movie, the guy is looking like straight on into the camera and saying, oh my God, they're killing women and children. Give us stop them. Like he's talking to the audience. And, like, I'm going to watch this movie. I'm going to go out and join the military. The thing is only like...
Golly, we better go join the military.
that is... totally why they made this movie.
We gotta go stop Hitler.
The thing is only like like 70 minutes long. They actually do get Hitler in the movie. They get him down and they shave him, and the Nazis see him and they don't know it's Hitler because he doesn't have his mustache. He's like, I am your Führer! I am your Führer! And they're like, get over there, you. They all speak fluent English. Like, you expect that at any point they're gonna go, yes, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Auf Wiedersehen.
And like the tycoon says to like the three wise guys, he's like, now you do know they do speak German over there. They're like, don't you worry about it. We ran a beer racket for several years. We picked up a few things. Like, okay. Well, bully for them. No one fucking speaks German in this movie anyway.
Yeah.
But that's my little movie review there for you.
Hello, Mr. Gordon. Good luck, Steve.
Hello, Murphy. Say, while we're over there, how much would it be worth to you if we knock off Mussolini at the same time?
Let me go right there.
In the Royal Canadian Air Force. They travel in convoy across the North Atlantic. Arriving somewhere in England, they became parachute troops. Always a part of their carefully made plans. Johnny Stevens...
Welcome back to the Radiodrome. So while we're on the topic of really weird movies and whatnot... Brad showed me this movie that's going to appear in Pierre Kirby week, so I will try to spare as little information as possible. But what I liked about, it was weird because this movie is about a little girl who finds this snake.
Thunder of the Gigantic Serpent.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Yeah. That's the name of the movie. Thunder of the Gigantic Serpent with starring, of course, Pierre Kirby. But here's the funny thing about this whole movie. This is just basically an old, like, 70s Japanese movie, and they just shot Pierre Kirby answering the phone. Kicking this guy's ass.
I would guess the Japanese stuff is probably 70s or 80s. The Pierre Kirby stuff is like 1988.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and this movie is just, it's about this little girl who finds this snake and somehow in the process of while this is going on, this scientist named Dr. T and the Women.
Hate that movie.
This scientist, whose real name actually is Dr. T, I just add the Women every time I hear his voice or hear his name because it's just fun.
Gives me nightmares because I actually saw the piece of shit Dr. T and the Women. Horrible fucking movie.
Like they'll actually use his name pretty excessively in the scene that he's in. He's basically in there for like one scene, and they use his name quite excessively. So it's really fun to just add "and the Women" every time you hear his name. Anyway, all while this is going on, Dr. T devises this box that makes the contents of it bigger. And I forget what the purpose of it was.
Purpose? Fuck that. He just wants to make things bigger.
So somehow this little girl gets a hold of this box, puts her pet snake in it, and the snake then mutates and gets gigantic over a period of time. So the Japanese military is sent out to destroy this snake, all while she's kidnapped, calling out for the snake, and you're wondering, where's Pierre Kirby in all this?
I wonder that in all of the movies of his I've seen. How is Pierre Kirby going to fit into all this?
Yeah. It's like she should be hollering for Ted Fast. Not Ted Fast. Not the snake. What was the snake's name again?
Oh, God. The little girl says the snake's name several times in the movie, and I could never for the life of me fucking understand what she was saying. I think she's saying Mazla. I think that's what she's saying.
It sounds a lot like Mazla, so yeah, we'll go with Mazla.
Okay, sounds the closest to Mothra.
Yeah, she should be saying Ted Fast instead of Mazla, Mazla. Help me, Mazla. What about help me, Ted Fast?
Which was Pierre Kirby's best name ever in one of his movies. His other movies, he's playing characters like Duncan, Ethan, blah, blah, blah. So in Ninja Untouchables, he plays a guy named Brian O'Reilly.
Hi, I'm Brian O'Reilly. Brian O'Reilly, I'm a fat, stinking drunk.
I'm a host of a fair, balanced show on Fox. Oh, that's Bill O'Reilly.
Fox, fair, and balanced?
These dopey left-wing loony traitors think I'm not an independent.
But I'm fair and balanced.
That's the kind of show that this is going to be. 1 minute, Ted Fast, Thunder of the Gigantic Serpent. The next minute, politics.
Exactly. Because we have ADD. We need Ritalin.
We do.
We need Ritalin.
Exactly.
But we're drinking beer, so it's the same thing.
Right.
Oh, by the way, this show is brought to you, of course. Should we plug them? Because I enjoy it so much, we'll plug it.
Fuck, go ahead.
Okay. Bud Light Lime. Seriously, go get it. It's good. For women who don't like beer, it's got a pretty decent lime taste. But for guys who like beer,
it makes you throw up.
It's not. For guys that like beer, it's not so strong that you can't taste the beer.
Dude, I can't believe it. It's our first episode and we've already sold out. Dude, we suck.
We suck. Sellouts. We'll be getting emails.
And just so we're coming up to the end here, just so everyone knows, this is our pilot episode. So beforehand, you might have heard, you know, maybe there be some audio problems, and we're using this pilot episode to kind of work out all
yeah.
the kinks that we're going to do with this show.
Yeah.
You're basically, the pilot is essentially our test run that happens yeah. to be our pilot that will be aired. So if you're listening to it and maybe the audio is higher in one place, it's lower in other places, we're going to be re-listening to this too, and we're going to pick up on that, and we're going to tweak things for future episodes.
Radiodrome is also on Yahoo.
Radiodrome@yahoo.com if you got some ideas for us. That was fun when we were trying to come up with a title.
Yeah.
I remember you were saying, like, internet killed the radio star. Yeah. That reminded me way too much of this horrible fucking movie that me and my friends tried making. It was after we graduated high school. We tried making this movie. Excuse me.
Now, you know what? You got me thinking about something. Go ahead and keep talking.
Well, we tried making this movie quite a few years ago, like shortly after we graduated high school. It was a movie that I wrote when I was a sophomore in high school, which right there tells you how great the script was. It was horrible. It was about four guys who work in a video store. So it was basically Clerks in a fucking video store. And it was awful. It just sucked. It all had to do with them trying to find dates and for, like, this big dinner they were having. And I can't remember. It's been so long since I've read that piece of shit. And we tried making this into a movie. And before we made it, I actually rewrote it. And even when I rewrote it, it was the worst fucking piece of shit that I ever wrote. So anyway, we kept trying to come up with titles for this piece of shit movie. One of the alternate titles was like DVD killed the video star. So we settled on calling it Straight to Video. It was going to be called Straight to Video. And this was an unfinished movie. We filmed a lot of scenes in a video store because one of the main cast members worked in a video store.
Oh.
So we took advantage of that. We were going to film it. We filmed it there. And the reason why it didn't get finished is because he got fired, which was a fucking blessing in disguise. Oh my God. I celebrated
hard. Was this somebody I know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Oh. It was, his name rhymes with Newford.
Oh.
But anyway,
Cubert?
Our friend Cubert, you know.
Cubert.
But the footage for the movie doesn't exist anywhere. I have no idea where it would be. It was awful. It was really bad. It's like three, I think that was, there are three projects we've tried doing that didn't get finished. One of them was a drama that took place in the 60s about a back alley abortion doctor.
Oh my God.
That didn't get finished.
Wow.
And he falls in love with one of his clients who's like husband is like an abusive prick. And it was like a black and white movie. And
a back alley.
Yeah.
Wow.
The reason why that one got canned, it wasn't a very good movie, but it got unfinished because the main character and the love interest were both a couple in real life.
Oh, really?
And they broke up in the shooting. So,
awkward.
You know, if your heart's not speaking for myself, you know, if my heart was truly in that project, I would have found some way to finish it. Like,
yeah.
I would have recast it or something like that. But it wasn't. These movies that are unfinished are from years and years ago. Like after high school. Like after high school graduation and whatnot.
And the funniest thing is that you just keep moving on. I mean, you've got like four or five movies that you're writing now. And
right, yeah. I would never start something now that I would imagine that I wouldn't finish. There was one thing, well, I don't know. There was one thing we tried making after we did Midnight Heat. It was a movie about coke dealers and like heroin addicts and stuff like that. Right after Midnight Heat. There you go. That's
no
a great
way.
Double feature. And it didn't get finished because it's always been a project that we want to finish someday. Or at least remake. But it was just bad timing when we started making it. Because like we were filming it at a location where like my ex-girlfriend was living and we had problems with scheduling, and it was just it couldn't be done. It couldn't be made at that particular moment in time. And that's when we started making Game Boys.
Oh.
So actually, I think it was like a year before we started making Game Boys that we tried making Secondhand, is what it was called, the one about the cops and drug dealers and whatnot.
Huh.
But I think that... Does that wrap everything up?
Just about. What I wanted to try was put in our password there. I can't remember how you spell it.
Right. This is our porn page. I completely forgot about that. But as far as like the title for
we are in. Okay.
We also are on Yahoo Messenger as well. Yeah, Radiodrome at yahoo.com.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to add us to your friends list and while we record, pop in like little, you know, little tidbits and whatnot, feel free.
Yeah, we settled on the title Radiodrome because the movie Videodrome is awesome. Clearly that means the radio show
will be awesome as well.
It should be awesome. But we will try to do this as often as we can. It was certainly a lot of fun. But we hope you all enjoyed our first episode. And please stay tuned to future episodes and also to Pierre Kirby Week on the Cinema Snob, which will be premiering this Monday. Finally, thank God.
Podcast.com. Special thanks to mypodcast.com for giving us an outlet for this. Writers are us two, Brad Jones and...
Writers!
Writers. Directors? Well, that would be me.
He's right. We'll see you next time.